Chat. Malcolm Turnbull announced that the laws of math do not apply here.
One of my favourite brands of comedy, Ariel, is brown people and black people making fun of white people.
Senators have been dropping like flies recently.
Shouting out the fact that in the Knowles Carter family, women just have one name.
Backchat on FBI Radio.
Hello and welcome to Backchat on FBI Radio, the freshest wrap of news and politics on your airwaves. I'm Osman Faruqi.
I'm Ariel Bogle.
And today, in the wake of the Charlottesville protest slash riot in Virginia in the United States last weekend, we're going to be talking about what's happening with similar far-right groups here in Australia and contrasting the history of racism colonization in both the States and Australia and looking at where we're at.
Yeah, that's right. But first, and here is something I never thought I would say, could Pauline Hanson be Community Radio's new best friend?
I'm very excited to find out how that could possibly be the case.
It is odd. But One Nation this week promised conditional support to the Liberal Party for its media reforms package in exchange for a cool $12 million boost to community radio.
Cha-ching, $12 million.
Yeah, imagine what we could do with $1 million.
Like what we could do with $12
million. Let's 12
aim.
Million.
It's all coming.
I was going to be sharing, you know, sharing, caring, communism, you know. But this is, of course, in exchange for this funding and also changes to the ABC, of course, because Hanson has always been obsessed with the lefty vibes over at our national broadcaster. Here she is on that this week.
All I can see is the ABC getting more of a stranglehold, pushing their agenda, their left-leaning views, and I thought, no, this is an opportunity, and you've raised some of the things that I've asked for, and hopefully we can get a balance back into our media so people can make a very well-informed opinion when they watch something, and we're not being dictated to people by too far to the right or people too far to the left.
I mean, who could disagree with that? Pauline Hanson's attitude balance. So what's happening in Canberra is that the government is trying to pass new laws to change the way Australia's media landscape works. They basically want to make it easier for big media companies to merge. It's a difficult commercial environment for a lot of media companies. They're struggling and they've been lobbying the government and the whole parliament basically to say, change the law, let us combine so we can compete more effectively. But some politicians, including Labor and the Greens and Nick Xenophon, are worried that that could lead to much less diversity in the media landscape as well.
Yeah, that's a problem that we already have as well. And, you know, a lot of towns and cities across Australia are one newspaper towns, and that newspaper is owned by
Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch and News Limited, which means, of course, the dialogue in that paper is often leans quite a bit to the right. And so I think that's the problem. You know, people aren't getting a diversity of views in regional areas. And I guess media merging, that might become more of a problem.
Totally. So the government hasn't been able to get support from the usual quarters on this bill. And they've reached out now to Pauline Hanson, who has said she's willing to play ball and throw the support of four One Nation senators behind the government's package. But in particular, they want, as well as the $12 million for community radio that we talked about, they're worried about the ABC. They think that the ABC should be focusing more on regional areas. They want more financial transparency and they want it to be more politically impartial, including adding the phrase fair and balanced to the ABC's charter, which is actually Fox News America's old slogan before they ditched it.
I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah, that's right. And there's one measure in particular that's attracted a lot of attention that would force the ABC to publish salary details of what all staff who get paid over $200,000 earn, basically.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And I'd be kind of interested for that to happen because recently over in the US, the BBC was also forced to reveal the salaries, I think, of its top 100 earners even. And guess what?
What happened?
Women were not earning that much.
Wow.
Compared to men.
Whoa. What? You're saying there's some sort of gender pay gap situation?
Shock. So only a third of the top earners at the BBC were female. And the top seven of all earners at the BBC, which was like a lot of money, like millions, awarded to individual men. The top seven at the BBC were all male. What a surprise. And I'd be very curious to see if that was also the case here at the ABC. Of course, we have some really top female journalists hosting some of our most prominent shows, Lee Sales, Emma Alberici, many more.
Sarah Ferguson on Four Corners.
Yeah, are they earning as much as Tony Jones? I would like to know.
Yeah, it's interesting. A few people that I spoke to, you know, initially thought, oh, this applies to everyone. That's kind of unfair because, you know, journalists move between organisations. It could impact negotiations, all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
But the ABC, you know, made this point to me earlier, Ariel. It's a publicly funded broadcaster.
Yeah, it is.
And if we're talking about people that are earning high six-figure salaries, over $200,000 a year, they're quite well-known people.
Yes.
And if it does expose things like a gender pay gap or, you know, even racial biases in terms of who's earning money, that is probably useful information for the public to know.
Yeah, I think so. And if we get these debates out in the open, we can only start, you know, the best way to have a conversation about, you know, lack of balance in pay is to know what the numbers are. And maybe this is a good start.
For sure. Look, you're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio 94.5 and streaming at FBIRadio.com. Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about the washout from the Charlottesville protests in Virginia last week and whether there's anything Australians should be paying close attention to when it comes to the far right here on our own shores.
And so you would have to have been living under a rock, as the saying is, not to have seen what happened last weekend over in the US in Charlottesville, Virginia. A university town, a really small, quite nice town that I've been to, was the place for quite a big white supremacist march, and what turned into a riot essentially left three people dead, including Heather Heyer, a young woman who was killed by an alleged white supremacist who ran his car into a crowd of protesters. And of course, in the aftermath, Trump has come under a great deal of fire for his perceived moral equivalence. He said there were good people on both sides. And this is what good people on both sides sounds like, I suppose.
Yes, that was audio footage of far-right protesters taking part in the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. And it ended up dominating quite a bit of, I guess, media attention both in the United States and here in Australia. A lot of people were pretty shocked at footage of, you know, young white men wielding flaming tiki torches, like with lit by citronella. Big mosquito problem in Charlottesville,
obviously.
I hear. And then at the really tragic death of Heather Heyer when that car plowed into the anti-fascist protesters.
Yeah.
But what we thought was really interesting is that even though, you know, I think a lot of the attention was deserved, it seemed a little bit out of whack with the fact that Australia has its own far-right white supremacist groups, and we actually end up giving them quite a lot of prominence in Australia in a bunch of different forums. There's a guy in particular called Blair Cottrell who was associated with the United Patriots group, and you might remember him from a segment on Hack Live talking about patriotism. Here he is.
Strong words from Pauline Hanson, and yesterday's Essential Research poll said that 49% of Australians actually agree with her when it comes to stopping Muslim immigration. Now, Blair Cottrell, you're a prominent member of the New Wave of Aussie Patriots. Why do you think you've seen an increase in support?
I think it's due to the fact that Australian people generally feel ostracised socially from society because they don't have anything they're allowed to be proud of. When it comes to national pride.
Look, that's an interesting grab, I think, for a few different reasons. One, the way that Cottrell was introduced by the host there, Tom Tilley, you're part of a new wave of Aussie patriots.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty euphemistic way of talking about someone associated with that spectrum of politics.
Yeah, if you think that patriotism is the same as being anti-Islam, then...
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't think that, that's a very strange way to put somebody... to characterise somebody who is openly racist.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same week as the Charlottesville attacks, a group called Antipodean Resistance, they're Melbourne-based, they claimed responsibility for sticking up posters around Melbourne high schools that included racist slogans like, "Keep Australia White." And I actually totally missed that story until that was pointed out to me by one of our producers this morning. And I think that's kind of an example of how we had all of our attention focused on what was happening in Charlottesville, which, again, did obviously deserve attention. But I wonder how many people knew that this was happening in Australia right now as well. There's also, Australia has its own answer to the so-called alt-right movement. We call them, well, we don't call them, they call themselves the Dingoes. And they have a podcast called The Convict Report. And, you know, it might be tempting to write these guys off as just kind of online trolls doing it for the banter and the lulls, but a federal government MP, George Christensen, who's from Queensland, he's a government backbencher, actually wields a bit of influence because when he says things on right-wing issues, the Prime Minister tends to dance to his tune. Mm-hmm. He was actually a guest on that podcast.
Yeah, he did sort of live to regret it, or he said so, when it was pointed out to him the, you know, anti-Semitic comments and much more that had been said on that podcast in the past. But he still went on it.
He still went on. Like, surely he should have done his due diligence before he jumped on.
You would think so. And, you know, lest we think that, you know, this is all just online banter and ironic Nazis online, you know, even in Australia, this kind of rhetoric translates into the real world, you know, putting people at risk. There was recently an anti-Islamic group, you know, performed a mock beheading outside Bendigo Council in protest against plans for the city's first mosque. And, of course, Pauline Hanson this week rocked up to Parliament in a burqa as a stunt. So if you don't think that those are acts of intimidation, I think you are deluded.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, the Hanson thing attracted international attention just because of how absurd it was.
Like, yeah.
I think it's often a lot easier to point fingers to what's happening in the rest of the world and say how crazy it is. We had a senator who has a policy platform of just whole-scale banning Muslim migration,
mm-hmm.
who... I mean, her point made no sense. She was trying to ban the burqa by wearing the burqa. But as you said, the point was to intimidate the community, the Muslim community, and to just say, you guys aren't welcome here. This is what it's all about. But if we go back to Charlottesville for a second, one of the flashpoints that has been brewing for a little while between the far right and, I guess, the rest of the community has had to do with statues of Confederate war heroes. So obviously the Civil War in the United States, largely a war fought on the basis of whether slavery should be legal or not. There are a whole bunch of statues that were built not from the era, right, Ariel? They're more recent.
So this is a really interesting part, and a lot of people have been pointing this out this week, because of course Trump and many others of, you know, saying, don't erase history, don't take down these statues. They, you know, if we erase them, we'll forget our past. I mean, for one thing, that's not true. But secondly, you have to really look at the dates when these statues were put up. I mean, a lot of these Confederate statues were put up in two eras. One was sort of 1910s, 1920s, and the other was the 1960s. And just to go back over a bit of US history, that early part of the 20th century was in the height of the Jim Crow era, when local governments around the US put in place new laws to sort of enforce segregation amongst the community, separating Black Americans and white Americans, you know, different water fountains, different schools, different housing policies. And then again in the 1960s, that was the height of the civil rights movement, when people like Martin Luther King Jr. were demanding rights for African American people. So these statues were put up not to celebrate the Confederate past, but more as acts, I think, of intimidation to remind people that did not have rights, that even if they might gain the right to vote, the right to hold property, etc., white people would still dominate the public space, dominate their lives in a way. And that's what the statues really represent, as they do here in Australia too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Stan Grant, an ABC journalist, has actually penned an article that went live last night. It's called America Tears Down Its Racist History While We Ignore Ours. And it makes a really interesting comparison to the fact that even though there was this protest of right-wing people at Charlottesville, a lot of cities across America, including in the South, have made decisions to tear down these statues. And they're basically dealing with that legacy that you've outlined and saying, look, we don't want to be a part of this anymore. But Stan Grant makes the point, well, there's a statue of James Cook at Hyde Park, which was not put up when James Cook arrived. It was put up about 100 years later.
Yeah.
And it describes Cook as the person who discovered the territory of Australia when he first landed here. And obviously, we know that's not the case. We know that Indigenous people have been living here for you know, tens of thousands of years, if not longer. And in addition to that, there are statues of Lachlan Macquarie, one of the first governors of the colony of New South Wales, who led military expeditions against Indigenous people, is responsible for the result of those as well. And yeah, I thought it was really interesting that this week we talked a lot about Confederate statues.
Mm.
And it took people like Stan Grant, who have been saying things like this for a long time, to just work really hard to remind us, no, guys, like, yes, we should worry about what's happening in the rest of the world, but let's also grapple with the problems that we've got here.
Exactly. And of course, in Australia too, these statues were not put up, as you said, when James Cook didn't build a statue to himself when he stepped foot on Australian shores.
I wouldn't put it past him to try.
These statues were put up, you know, around the turn of the century, around Federation, as a statement about who Australia was. And at the time, we wanted to say Australia was discovered by white people, and we were a white nation with white values, and we wanted to dismiss and erase our Indigenous past. So I guess there is an open question about whether that's the kind of country we want to be, whether we want the sort of statues and the public art every time we walk past it to remind ourselves of that history. Is that the one we want? I think that it's a topic very much worthy of discussion, and it's a great piece from Stan to start opening up that conversation.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And I think there's another analogy that occurred to me, and it's to do with Australia Day, right? Like, it's not a statue, but it's an event that we celebrate and commemorate. And this week it became part of the political agenda when Melbourne's Yarra Council voted unanimously to no longer celebrate January 26th as Australia Day, and they would no longer have citizenship ceremonies on that day. The government responded pretty, furiously. The Prime Minister petulantly as well. The Prime Minister first did a press conference condemning the move. He then gave a speech in Parliament on indulgence, talking about how important Australia Day was and the values that it, you know, represented. Mm-hmm. Then his Assistant Minister for Border Protection, Alex Hawke, wrote to Yarra Council suspending their right to hold any immigration ceremonies, all because they took a stance on Australia Day.
Yeah, it's interesting that this is a topic that Turnbull and his government decided to take a strong stance on in a week where, you know,
beset by all sorts of other problems.
Yeah, I guess they saw an easy win there for themselves because they had the power that they didn't have to, like, ask Labor Party to help them through with.
No, exactly. And I think there was an element of just desperation, like, okay, we're losing, we're being ironically smashed by citizenship saga stuff. So let's just talk about the Australia Day kind of culture war. But Australia Day, again, is not a holiday that has been around forever.
No.
It's been celebrated on different days, and I think it was maybe 21 or slightly over that years ago that it became cemented as being celebrated on...
And a public holiday.
And a public holiday on January 26th.
Yeah, but I think, like, we could really do with... You know, choosing a different day, and I especially think if we become a republic, or when we become a republic, rather, because it is inevitable that we make it that day, and that's a day we could all share, hopefully.
For sure. Look, that's all we've got time for on that segment, but we're keen on your thoughts if you want to text them in, 0409 945 945, and of course you're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio at 94.5. Coming up right now is my favourite segment, just because the intro has my favourite sound sample of history. Get ready, it's Backchat Roulette. to be clear, it's not the roulette sound that's my favourite. I'm not a big fan of gambling and roulette. It's the air horns. I love them.
Yes. Didn't know you like gambling.
this is when Ariel and I and a guest fly through a story that we thought was really important this week, and that you might have missed, but we think you should have paid attention to. And joining us, special guest, Selena Shannon, executive producer of All the Best in FBI. How you going?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. We needed someone to round out the show, and we've got one of the coolest people around. I'm going to kick it off. So here's my story. Ecstasy purity in Australia is really, really bad. Apparently, it's world record bad. So there's been a survey, global survey.
Wait, when you say bad, do you mean high or low?
Low, yeah. I'm getting to it. So a global study of 25,000 ecstasy pills found that Australian ecstasy pills had the lowest quality of MDMA. Only 16% of MDMA pills tested contained pure MDMA, and that was like half as much compared to most of Europe and America.
Why is this?
Look, there are a lot of reasons, I think, to do with the way that they're manufactured, the way that they're imported in other countries. But one of the points that the article that I read made is that, you know, this is a reason why we should have pill testing in this country, because, you know, if the vast majority of ecstasy pills are not ecstasy pills, kids or anyone should know what they're consuming when they're consuming it.
Too true.
It also raises a lot of problems when people go overseas and they've become accustomed, I guess, to consumption in Australia, and then they go overseas.
Hectic night.
Yeah, and they're just, really dangerous consumption levels.
Yeah, and look, without, you know, getting into too much details about consumption, I don't think the community broadcasting guidelines let us do that. You know, there's a general community perception that these kinds of drugs are not the quality that they should be in terms of safety. So, you know, it's good to joke, as I was, about how bad the purity is, but it's a real safety issue. So,
Something else has to be in them.
Exactly. And the second most likely product that was in these pills in Australia was unknown. Ugh. So the scientists had no idea what these chemicals were.
Love that. Talcum powder.
Yeah, it could be talcum powder. It could be all sorts of other crazy stuff.
Talcum powder would be the best possible scenario.
Ariel, what do you got?
So I have an interesting piece that was written. It's written by Michael Chabon, who's an American author. And it's an open letter to our fellow Jews. So I think it applies to everyone, though. So this is a letter in the wake of Charlottesville. He wrote it, of course, in the American situation. There are plenty of Jewish people in the administration, not least the president's own son-in-law and now daughter because she converted.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there are Jewish people in the administration, and there is the Israeli government, which sort of made a deal with the devil to support, you know, in sentiment, Trump, you know, just because of his favoritism about Israel. And I suppose the message is that I got out of this, and I think it's a powerful one, that, you know, even here in Australia, Jewish people, you know, may feel white, they may pass as white, but history tells us Jews are only as white as the white people let us be. So don't get complacent. And I guess I just want to read from this piece. It says, the question is, what are you going to do about it? If you don't feel or can't show any concern, pain or understanding for the persecution and demonization of others, at least show a little self-interest, at least show a little special, at least, the very least, show a little self-respect. And I think that's a message that Jews around the world could take on this week, and especially that goes out to Jared Kushner, the Kush. Better read up.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, Jared Kushner, consider yourself put on notice by Ariel.
I was reading a little bit about the synagogue they go to, and apparently it's famously an apolitical synagogue, right. And people from across the whole spectrum of politics go to this synagogue, and it's kind of understood that once you're inside, there's no politics, we're all just here to worship and converse and practice their faith. But then there's a few people who are now questioning whether this is going to be the moment that makes this synagogue, that changes how the way the synagogue operates normally.
That's interesting.
There's a really chilling piece too by a rabbi in Charlottesville, because last Saturday not only was there the sort of riots on the streets, but armed militia stood outside the synagogue there in an act of intimidation, and they were worried that they would have to come inside, and some sort of veterans in the area decided to stand outside the synagogue in support keep the synagogue safe. So, yeah, good times for everybody old America, but it could also happen here. Don't get complacent.
Selena, what's your roulette yarn?
Well, I'm going to keep things in America. I'm a huge podcast fan, as you guys both know.
No way.
I know, huge shock. So I'm going to come... I've brought in a bit of a podcast recommendation.
You have.
I know, no surprise. It's called It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders, and it's a podcast from NPR in America. And it's a new show that this journalist, Sam Sanders, who I adore, I think he's fantastic, just started up a couple of months ago. He used to be the host of NPR Politics, which was kind of like a straight politics podcast on NPR. And he's decided that even though he's brilliant when it comes to politics and elections and covering government and whatever in America, he really wants to do a program that balances politics with pop culture.
Oh, wow.
A bit more.
What?
Yeah.
This sounds like my jam.
I know, Oz, you would love this show. So he's got this, his new podcast is called It's Been a Minute, and it releases two episodes a week.
Wow.
On Tuesday, they do a deep dive, and then on Friday, they do a weekly wrap-up. And normally, I really don't like weekly wrap-ups about American politics because it moves so quickly at the moment that by the time you listen to the wrap-up, everything's irrelevant.
You've done it 1,000 times.
Done it 1,000 times, and also Trump has tweeted something that then negates the whole wrap-up. But this one's really fantastic. I thought their Charlottesville deep dive was really, really fantastic. Even after you had consumed so much about it, it was still bringing new ideas and new voices to it. But then they also balance that against interviews with, you know, the actor Lakeith Stanfield. He was in Atlanta. He's Darius in Atlanta. In Get Out. So they kind of have these two sides to the show. Awesome. So people who like politics and pop culture would really like this. And I feel kind of bad bringing it up on Backchat because it's quite similar to Backchat.
I mean, they're trying to do what we do. It's not going to be as good as
Backchat. They're really following in your
footsteps. Give it a crack. Good on them for trying. That's an awesome rec. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I will listen.
That's all we've got time for on Backchat today, but thanks for joining us, Selena. That was
anytime.
Great. Yeah, we'll come back on and tell us more awesome podcast recs.
And we are looking for a new social media producer. Is that you?
It's exciting. Get involved with the show. Your chance to be part of the wonderful, exciting Backchat team.
Exactly. Check out fbiradio.com for info, and applications close next Friday. You get to hang out with us.
And of course, the time is running out to enroll to vote for the upcoming postal survey on marriage equality. Go to aec.gov.au/enroll. You've got till August 24th to update your details. Make sure that the letter gets sent to your current address and that you can vote. Please do it. It takes 5 minutes.